I'm going to do a short series on a topic. We're going to look at a couple Bible stories today, but it's not maybe how typical how I typically teach, and so like it might seem a little weird to you, but just hang with me, okay? And what I want to talk about is I want to talk about building trust. That's what I want to talk about the next couple weeks, building trust. You know, I don't know how much you think about trust, but it's an important subject to me and has been for years. And matter of fact, if you've in the room, like have done pre-marriage coaching with me or couples coaching with me, it's one of the things that I talk a lot about, just the subject of trust. And it's such an important topic. And for me, it's important just in regards to just the idea of stewarding trust. You know, if people extend trust to me, I want to steward that trust. I want to handle that correctly. And that's not, we don't often think about it. You know, we just, well, they trust me or they don't trust me. We just go through life. But the reality is, every one of us have this honor and this privilege when someone else extends trust to us. And we need to steward that. Y'all with me? It's a really important topic. And so we're going to talk about what is trust, how is trust built, how is trust broken, you know, how can trust be repaired, all kinds of things. You know, somebody has said, and it's been often said, that trust is the foundation of every relationship. And, you know, if you don't really have trust with someone, like, you know, I'll pick on Pam here. Pam and I have known each other for years, years and years, more longer than we want to admit, right? Because it makes us both older. But if she doesn't trust me and I don't trust her, we really have no relationship. I mean, we you know, like, hi, how are you? You know, but she wouldn't say, if there wasn't some level of trust, she wouldn't even stick around here. I mean, that's just how it works. And we take trust for granted. We take it for granted in parenting. We take it for granted in marriage. We take it for granted in church world. We take it for granted. I mean, just in teams, we just take it for granted. It's just, I hate to say that, but it is the reality. And in the world we're in today, you know, one of the questions that might get asked is who do you trust anymore? I mean, that might be one of the top questions people have on their heart. It's like, who do you trust? Because we've recognized that so many times that trust has been broken. And we'll talk about some of the ways that happens. You know, somebody else has said that trust is the glue of a relationship. You know, it's interesting when you study trust, and there's been a lot of books written about it. Barb and I are listening to a great book right now called The Science of Trust from the Gottman Institute at the University of Washington. It's a great book on trust if you want to. It's got a lot of technical stuff in it, but it's a really, really good book. But the interesting thing about trust is that we oftentimes think that we are more trustworthy than the people in our lives think we are. You know, there's a number of different terms for it. Sometimes it's called the illusion of moral superiority. This illusion that we're more trustworthy than others are. You know, and some other times it's called self-enhancement bias. Oftentimes it's referred to as the halo effect. We look in the mirror and we see a halo on us. I actually took a couple of different pictures and I tried to put them into AI and I just couldn't get it to work and I wasn't going to pay to get it to do it. But I had one of them with me and Barbara and I was going to have it put a halo over me. So if it's a halo effect on one side, when you believe that you are more trustworthy than, what would be the other side? The horn effect, that's it. So I was hoping that I could get, you know, like, and I had a pastor friend over in Marysville. I was going to send it to him, but I couldn't, I wasn't going to pay to have AI put a halo on me and a horn on Nick or my wife. But that, you get the picture? See, we have this, there's this thing about us as people that we often think we are more trustworthy than we really are, and we think that other people are less trustworthy than they really are. I mean, that's just how people oftentimes look at other people. And they generally rate themselves as more trustworthy than others perceive them to be. And so again, it's called the halo effect, or it's called the horn effect on the opposite side. And here's a great definition of trust. This is probably my favorite definition of trust is by Paul David Tripp. He says, trust is being convinced that you can rely on the integrity, strength, character, and faithfulness of another that you are willing to place yourself in his or her care. So you have this, you're convinced that somehow you can rely on their integrity or what they're going to do and their strength, their character, those kinds of things. And the interesting thing is about trust is I can be trustworthy in one area and not trustworthy in another area in life. Like I could be trustworthy in regards to holding a confidence. You know, you tell me something and you go, we haven't told anybody else about this. We don't want you to tell anybody. And so when people say that to me, most of the time, I never even tell my wife about it unless I ask permission and say, can I tell my wife about this? So I can be trustworthy when it comes to, let's just say, holding a confidence, but in financial integrity, I might not be trustworthy. Does that make sense? So it's not just like, okay, well, I can hold a confidence, so now I'm a trustworthy person. Well, it might be true in one area or a couple areas, but it may not be true across the board. You know, just the whole idea of being trustful. And using the definition, it's the idea of that a trust is being convinced that you can rely on the integrity, strength, character, faithfulness of another. You're willing to place your finances into their hands. Or you're willing to place your friendship into their hands. Or you're willing to place, you know, whatever it happened to be. I mean, you could look at the same thing in regards to your medical, you know, your medical care. You know, most of us, you know, if we don't feel like we can trust a doctor, we go find a different doctor. Because we just don't believe that this is the person we should be entrusting, you know, our physical health to. Or mental health, or whatever it happens to me. Over the last few weeks, as you guys know, I've been going through a whole bunch of dental work, and I told my dentist, I said, this is like the ultimate trust exercise. Because you just lay back in this chair, and the dentist comes in, and they put that big old thing in your mouth. I don't know what it looks like, I can just imagine, you know, your mouth, you know, it's like the wind blowing in those pictures, you know, where your mouth is like this. And they just start working on your teeth. You know, I went in this week again for another procedure, and this time they were working on another tooth that's from the trauma of, you know, getting beat up years ago. And they worked on it, they ground on it, they cut on it, all this, and the noise is the worst. You know, you're hearing all that and you feel it, and you know, all this is going on. And then we get all done, and she says, you know, I need to confer with, you know, the guy that was going to do the root canal. And so they, you know, they take these x-rays. I mean, it's all really fancy stuff. And I'm sitting there with my mouth wide open. You know, she's saying this stuff. And then she goes to another room. And then she comes back. And my mouth is, you know, she goes to another room, comes back. And then the guy comes in. He says, you know, we've just done all this work, but we're not going to be able to save that tooth. You know, your body has been eating that tooth away over all these years. And so come back in 2 weeks and we'll yank it out. I mean, it's like this ultimate trust thing. Like, okay, I'll just open my mouth, lay here, open my mouth, just do whatever you want to my face. You know, it's like, okay. And so trust is, and it is such a challenge in our world today. Like I wrote down, who do you trust, which I've already mentioned. Do you trust news? Which news? Social media? Which social media? Do you trust friends? Which friends? Yeah, like Gloria is going like this. Well, there's some I trust and some like I don't trust, you know. I mean, you got, again, who do you trust? Who, you know, in regards to your family members, I have family members I trust, and I would say there are family members I do not trust. There are family members I would say certain things to, and there are other family members I would never say that to. And some of them may even be online right now, so let them figure it out. But we all do this. You know, which political party? All those kinds of things. You know, who do you trust? Do you trust Democrats? Do you trust Republicans? Do you trust none of them? You know, do you like, you know, and sometimes you just shrug your shoulder and, yeah, all of them, none of them. So who do you trust? For 25 straight years, the number one trusted profession in the nation has been Christy, please stand. Yeah, Christy can stand. Nurses. There's one of the most trusted professions. Way to go, nurses. And having been, you know, around the hospitals for years and years and years, they're the only ones who really know what's going on. I mean, they really do run the hospital, and they run all the stuff that goes on. And so Nurse Terry over here, that's what our family has called her, I don't know, for how many ever years. I don't even want to ask you, but years, Nurse Terry. Nurses. And then firefighters, and then grade school teachers, and then military officers. At the bottom of the list for years now, lobbyists. You know, someone who's in Washington, D.C. and gets paid to try and get something passed, lobbyists, and then right above them are members of Congress. TV reporters, advertisers, you know, they're at the bottom of the list. And this breaks my heart. But as pastors, pastors are about middle of the gamut. In my mind, pastors should be way, way higher than that. But, you know, in a national survey, that's how they come, about right in the middle. Over the weeks, I'm going to, and I'm not sure how long this is going to be, it'll be a few weeks, but I'm going to show you a couple of pictures, and I thought I was going to get to one today, a picture that's going to, I'm going to use my running illustration, but then this morning I decided I can't make you guys go through this today as long as we're going to be. So I took it out. I'll show it to you next week. But let me show you a couple of interesting Bible passages. At least they're interesting to me. In Numbers chapter 11, the children of Israel have been wandering through the wilderness. You know, they came out of Egypt, went through the Red Sea, and they've been wandering in the wilderness. And as they're wandering in the wilderness, you know, God's been taking care of them. He's been guiding them. The, you know, pillar of fire by night and the cloud by day. And I mean, he's just been leading and guiding them. And Numbers chapter 11 says this. It says, soon the people began to complain about their hardship. And the Lord heard everything they said. Then the Lord's anger blazed against them, and he sent a fire to rage among them and destroyed some of the people in the outskirts of the camp. Then the people screamed to Moses for help. And when he prayed to the Lord, the fire stopped. And after that, the area was known as, and tells what the area is. Says, then, so they're complaining to God, I'm like, complain. And it says, then the foreign rabble who were traveling with the Israelites began to crave the good things of Egypt. And the people of Israel also began to complain. Oh, for the meat we had. We remember the fish we used to eat from the for free in Egypt. If I remember the story, they were what? They were slaves for 400 years, but for free. We ate it for free and ate some of the meat, and we used to eat for the free, and we had all the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and onions and garlic we wanted, but now our appetites are gone. All we ever see is this thing called manna. God's providing manna for them every day. You know, and all we ever see. Talks about what manna means. It says, and Moses heard all the families standing in the doorways of their tents whining. And the Lord became extremely angry. Moses was also very aggravated. And Moses said to the Lord, why are you treating your servant so harshly? Have mercy on me. What did I do to deserve the burden of all these people? I mean, you give me this grumbling group of people. What did I ever do to you? What did I do to deserve them? Did I give birth to them? Did I bring them into the world? Why did you tell me to carry them in my arms like a mother carries a nursing baby? How can I carry them to the land you swore to give their ancestors? Where am I supposed to get meat for all these people? They keep whining, saying to me, give us meat to eat. We want meat to eat. I can't carry all these people by myself. The load's too heavy to bear. And this is how you intend to treat me? Just go ahead and kill me. Do me a favor and spare me this misery. He's having a pity party. I mean, that's what's going on. He's having this pity party. And so, you know, it goes on. The story goes on. God speaks to Moses and says, well, go choose 70 elders to help you carry the load of all the stuff that's going on with all the people and so on. And then at some point then the leader, these 70 people all get together, the leaders, and the Spirit of the Lord falls on them. And they begin to prophesy. They're speaking as if they were speaking for God. And then Joshua gets involved in this negative thing. And it says, Joshua, the son of Nun, who had been Moses' assistant since his youth, protested, Moses, my master, make them stop. But Moses replied, are you jealous for my sake? I wish that all the Lord's people were prophets and that the Lord would put his Spirit upon them all. Joshua gets involved in the whole negative thing. And then let me go to I'm skipping over some verses. The Lord sends them quail. The wind blows in and all this quail comes in. There's quail and everywhere. And to the place where, as the story goes on, they get tired of quail. They're sick of this quail. And then it says this in chapter 12. It says, while they're at Hazeroth, Miriam and Aaron criticized Moses because he married a Cushite woman. So first it's the whole crowd. Then it's the rabble-rousers who are trying to, stir up the complaining about, the food they get to eat. And then it's Moses complaining. Then it's Joshua complaining. And now Joshua's sister and brother-in-law, or brother and sister, stepbrother, sister, are complaining. And they criticize Moses because he had married this Cushite woman. They said, has the Lord spoken only through Moses? Hasn't he spoken to us through us too? But the Lord heard them, and now Moses was very humble, more humble than any other person on the earth. So immediately the Lord called to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam and said, go to the tabernacle, all three of you. So the three of them went to the tent, and then the Lord descended in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tabernacle. And Aaron and Miriam, he called, and they stepped forward, and the Lord said to them, he says, now listen to what I say. If there were prophets among you, I, the Lord, would reveal myself in visions. I would speak to them in dreams. But not with my servant Moses. Of all of my house, he is the one I trust. He says, I speak to him face to face, clearly and not in riddles. He sees the Lord as he is. So why are you not afraid to criticize my servant Moses? He says to Miriam and Aaron, he says, of all my house, of all the people, of all of the people that I just brought out of Egypt, of all of them, the only one I trust is Moses. It's the only place in the scriptures that it ever says that God trusts a person. It's the only place. There's no other scripture where it's even inferred that God trusts someone else. So what is it about Moses that makes God trust Moses? what was it, the way he talked? Was it, what was going on in his heart? Was it how consistent he was? What was it that made God trust Moses? And what would it be like if God spoke that and said, I trust Matt? Kind of a weird thought that God looks down on all these people, how many ever hundreds of thousands there were, some people say even maybe as many as a million people came out of Egypt. And God says, of every one of them, there's one that I trust, and it's Moses. So again, what would it, I can't even imagine that God would say to me or of me that he trusts me. And that might be hurtful. Like, well, Matt, he trusts you. Yeah, but I don't think he trusts me like he trusted Moses. And is that a mar on my trustworthiness? Again, there's just these nuances that I don't have figured out about this whole thought. Let me take you to another passage of scripture, and I'm going to juxtaposition this scripture against that one. This is in the New Testament. This has to do with Jesus. And so what's happened up at this point is Jesus has left home. We believe he's about 30 years old. He left home. He started traveling around. He calls his first disciples. He calls Andrew and Simon, Peter, and he calls James and John, and he calls Philip and Nathaniel. So he's, at this point, best we know, he's got six, disciples that are with him. And there's a group of people. They go to a wedding in Cana. This is where Jesus does that first wedding. He turns water into wine. if you remember the whole wedding, he turns the water into wine. They tell him to just go do what Mary tells you to do, and they, you know, with the water. And then after that, they go to the first event as a group, to the first Passover celebration that went on in Jerusalem. So Jesus has gone to Passover before, but this is the first time now that Jesus has left home. He's the Messiah. He's gone on this Passover. He's going to Jerusalem for this Passover. He gets to the Jerusalem, and he sees all these people buying and selling and trading all kinds of things in the temple. And, you know, we've heard the story. He clears the temple. It's one of the two times he clears the temple. I mean, turning over tables and, you know, kind of whip, makes a whip. And, I mean, all this stuff. And but there's a bunch of stuff that happened there that we don't know about because it's not recorded for us. But in John chapter 2, beginning of verse 23, it says, because of the miraculous signs Jesus did in Jerusalem at the Passover celebration, many began to trust in him, but Jesus didn't trust them because he knew human nature. No one needed to tell him what mankind is really like. So here's this juxtaposition. You got God with the children of Israel, and he says, of all the people, I trust Moses. And you move forward 2,000 years, and here you are in the, you know, the Passover's just over, and it says that some of the people were starting to trust Jesus, but Jesus didn't what? Trust them. Now, what's it like to say, you know, well, God, trust me, you know, kind of like Moses. But on the other side to say, but Jesus can't trust me. Because he knows what's going on in my life. He knows what's going on in my heart. He knows what my motives are. He knows what all the hidden thoughts are, all those things. To say that somehow Jesus couldn't trust me. It's an interesting juxtaposition. And I don't have all the nuances of it figured out. Here's what I do know from this. Here's what I do know. I don't have it figured. Over here, God's trusting Moses, the one person he says he trusts. And over here, here's Jesus, the Messiah, who looks at all these people and says, I don't trust them. He withholds trust from them. I don't have it all figured out, but here's what I do know. I'll tell you the one thing I do know from all this, is trust is a very, very big deal. That's what I do know. Trust is a very, very big deal, and too often, I hate to say it, but too often, we take trust for granted. We do not even think about what it means to hold trust and to steward it. I could use that, to steward it. Am I living in a trustworthy way? Am I talking in a trustworthy way? Am I being responsible in a trustworthy way? You know, to even think about that, to think about it in marriage, to think about it in parenting, to think about it in business, to think about it in a community, to think about it with a team that I, you know, might be coaching. We just don't think, I mean, we just go through life and don't even think about it. And if they trust me, they trust me. If they don't, they, you know, like, que sera, sera, kind of thing. But I'm hoping over the weeks to help you understand a little bit more of the nuances of trust, but also to help you kind of put it more on the front of your vision to go, am I living in a way that helps this person trust me more? Y'all with me? That's what I'm hoping for. I just know that it's a very big deal. You know, Wiktionary, the dictionary of Wikipedia, Wiktionary. So what Wiktionary does is, one of the things they do is they list the words by usage. And trust is like the 883rd most used word in the English language. It gets used all the time. Written, spoken, all those kinds of things. There's another website called Word Count, and of the 86,800 words in the English language that they list, trust is the 999th word, most used word. It's just used all the time because it's such an important thing, but so misunderstood. And, you know, research repeatedly reveals that the most widely desired characteristic in a person who's going to be your partner is that they can be trusted. I mean, a list like, is this the most important? 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 And across all kinds of research, most of the time, either the top one or one of the top ones is, I want a partner who I can trust. But it only makes sense. I mean, why would you, like, you might get twittipated and you might get hormones raging and, you know, all kinds of stuff in a, you know, couple, you know, between a couples, and sometimes that's how couples get, you know, into or get connected together. And, but nobody says, you know what, I think I'll marry someone I don't trust. I mean, they might fall into it. They might fall into that relationship or, you know, whatever, however you want to look at it. But they, people don't set out. It's like people don't set out to go to a, work at a job and then go work at a job. I mean, sometimes they just want a job because they just need money. But if they have a choice of what job they're going to take, they don't go and go to, you know, they're maybe doing a little bit of talking to some people that work at that company. Can you trust that guy? Do you trust that guy? Well, no, I don't trust him. Well, then, I mean, they go, oh, that's the place I want to work. People want to trust their bosses. But again, in the whole halo effect thing, the interesting thing about the halo effect is that with bosses, I mean, this there's a thing called the trust gap in business. And the trust gap is the difference between how bosses believe employees trust them and how employees believe their bosses trust them. There's a gap in there. Sometimes the gap is as much as 60%. Difference in how the two look at each other. So you got an employer who says, man, they trust me. My employees trust me. And yet companies will survey the employees and the employees will say, yeah, not so much. They have this halo idea that they're more trustworthy than the people that work for them see them as trustworthy. And oftentimes that's because we fail, you know, employers fail to have the idea in our minds that I need to stewardship the trust. The trust is, it's really, I mean, you know, you're trying to make money and, you know, and for us, we're trying to, you know, see life, people's lives changed and so on, and whether that's the church or the school. But trust is the thing that makes it all possible. And if you don't have that trust, what do you have? You know, I mean, you have to have that trust. And so there's this huge difference. You know, Forbes says that 61%, Forbes magazine says, 61% of workers perceive that their employees don't trust them. On the other side, 50% of employees say they trust strangers more than they trust bosses. 50% of employees say they trust the strangers more than they trust their boss. Again, it's a big deal. This whole trust thing is just a big deal. And we don't pay enough attention to it. What was it about Moses that made God trust him? And what was it about the people that made Jesus not trust them? What are those things? You know, trust is not a one thing, it's not one thing, like a one-time action. It's a compound thing. It's built over time. I mean, it can take a long, long time. Like, just like you, I've had, and it's fashioned from a combination of interactions over time. And like you, I've had relationships where it took a long, where I'll say it this way. I've had relationships where trust happens really quickly. And oftentimes that's because, you know, like when people walk in, I mean, this is, talk the pastor word here for a second. Every time someone walks into the church who I don't know or I don't know well, one of the questions is, how long will it take me to build trust with that person? Because everybody who comes in with an experience. They come in with a background. They come in being disappointed. They come in having had good experiences. Or they come in, and if they come in with a friend who trusts me, they're more likely to trust me quicker than if they don't come in with a friend. Does that make sense? I mean, it's just how relationships work. It's just how it works. But I've also had relationships where it takes a long, long time. You know, I might treat that person the same way that I treat Pam, which I think I treat you pretty well, so... But I treat her exactly the same way I treat Pam. And there's that person sitting right there. Pam, trust me. And this person, it takes a long, long, long time to build up trust with this person. And it's not even related to me. It's related to other relationships where trust has been broken in their life that makes it harder or easier for them to trust. If you grew up in a family where trust was high, and then you go out into the work world, you are more likely to trust people quicker than if you come from a family where trust was regularly broken. Because if trust was regularly broken, you're always on the lookout for how this person's going to break your trust. That's what you're always on the lookout for. A couple years ago, I was at the fair. You know, I spent a lot of time at the fair during the fair, as most of you know, or many of you know. And I was having this long conversation. It was like a two-hour conversation with these couple ladies that I've known for years. Politically, we are on totally opposite ends of the spectrum. Culturally, we are on opposite ends of the spectrum. Spiritually, we are on opposite ends of the spectrum. But we've been friends for a number of years. But I had never had this kind of a lengthy conversation. It was about 2 hours long. And when we were all done, one of these ladies said to me, said, "Thank you, Matt, for this conversation." And then said, "I didn't know we could have a conversation with people like you, with a person like you." So even though years of friendship, years of different interactions with them, I was lumped together with a group of people they don't trust. They have a certain political bend, moral bend, spiritual bend, cultural bend. And sometimes that's what makes trust hard in relationships is Pam and I have this long relationship and with all this interaction, where Johan on the other side, he can lump me together with all these other people that he don't trust. He doesn't trust. Don't do my English, okay? Just that he doesn't trust. I can just get lumped together with all those people. And that's part of the dichotomy of what's going on in our culture right now, is we lump people together and then base our trust on lumpings when people are not part of a lump. Right? I mean, people come in and they go, "Okay, Matt, are you on that lump or are you with this lump?" And I go, "I don't do lumps. I don't do lumps. I agree with this person on some of these things. I absolutely do not agree with this person on some of these. I agree with that person on some of these things, but there are things I absolutely do not agree with." But trust sometimes is regulated by people lumping people into this lump, and it makes it hard. And there's two continuums. Let me show you a little chart here. We're just about to wrap up here. There's this little chart that I put together. This is my own thinking. I was reading and all this stuff on this. Some people are easier to trust, and some people are harder to trust. You know, you have someone in your life, and you're like, I'm still trying to boil down the difference between distrust and mistrust, because those words are not synonymous. There are nuances, and I don't have it figured out yet. So maybe in a couple weeks I'll have it figured out. Maybe. But there are people who walk into our life who we just, you know, you just start interacting with and go, "This is a person I can trust. I can trust this person." And there's other people that you've been around for a while, and for whatever reason, it is hard for you to trust them. So that's one side of the continuum, or one part of the continuum. The other part of the continuum is some people find it easier to trust, and some people find it harder to trust. How many of you, just by a raise of hand, how many of you would say, I find it pretty easy to trust people? Raise your hand. Okay. How about, I find it hard to trust people? Raise your hand. It's almost 50-50. It's almost 50-50. You know, in regards to how we, and so that plays into it. So not only is it, are they trustworthy? So I can go, I can go with Dennis here. I can go, "I think he's trustworthy, but he," and I might have that gut feeling, but I have my reservations because it's hard for me to trust people. I've had people named Dennis that have burned me before. I haven't really, but... DJ, yeah, okay. So he's not Dennis, he's DJ, so that makes it better, okay? But you all get the idea of what I'm talking about. That it's not a simple thing, because some people are easier to trust than other people, and some people trust easier than other people. And if, you know, in second marriages, trust is a struggle. Especially if the first marriage was hard. The second marriage, because like, what, you know, I've done this before and I don't know. Same with you know, parenting. If somebody's, you know, on the other side, if it's a kid and the kid's had a bad coach, they're hesitant sometimes even to join a team because they don't know if they're going to get burned by this next coach or a teacher, whatever it happens to be. It's this thing we regulate all the time that's we're at work in our lives. And again, part of my wanting to talk about this over a few weeks is I don't think we give it enough attention. I just think we just kind of laissez-faire through life without thinking about, do my employees trust me? Do my coworkers trust me? Does my wife trust me? Does my husband trust me? Or when trust has been broken, and there are relationships in this room where trust has been broken, how do you put that trust back? How do you rebuild that trust? How do you somehow recover from a betrayal or whatever else it happens to be? Brené Brown, she's an author. Many of you know who she is and have read her stuff. She says this. She says trust is stacking and layering of small moments and reciprocal vulnerability over time. You know, it's just layer upon layer upon layer upon layer. And the reality is, and part of what we'll talk about next week, the reality is every one of those layers where trust gets a little bit stronger, trust gets a little bit stronger, trust gets a little bit stronger. And because that's how it's built. That's how trust gets built. And I'm hoping to help you understand some of the dynamics of trust, help you trust others more, maybe become a little more trustworthy. Somebody else said this, trust takes years to build, seconds to break, and forever to repair. Some of you have had trust broken, and I want to help you figure out how do I recuperate? How do I get back where I could be someone who could trust other people? Let's stand together. Brenda's going to come lead us in a song. Let me throw a couple questions your way. Just self-reflection questions. Maybe they would be self-reflection questions in the middle of even while you're singing, or maybe you just listen to the song. These would be the kind of the questions that I'm just trying to help us walk through. Am I living in ways that build trust, or am I living in ways that tear trust down? Just that you'd evaluate yourself, just like, you know, maybe it's your marriage, maybe it's your parenting, maybe you're an employer and you have employees, and am I being an employer who are helping my employees to trust me more, to trust our business more? Or am I treating them in such a way that trust just constantly gets broken and damaged? Which is easy to do. And you all know, if you know from the work world, that's different with every employee. Because you got some employees that are they trust easy. You got some employees that trust, it's very hard for them to trust. And yet still, you want to be an employer that helps build trust in that business. Because if you don't build trust in that business, what do you have? You know, a guy comes to work or a woman comes to work and goes, you know, the reality, going back to nurses, the reality is it's one of the quandaries that is going on in the medical field right now, the medical world, is the lack of trust between nurses and management of these big corporate hospitals. Big discrepancy in those things. So how do you continue to be a nurse who your customers can trust, your patients can trust you, at the same time you're walking in a place where you don't trust the person who's your oversight? And yet, if I'm not living in a way as a nurse that my patients can trust me, I am being a disservice to that patient, because they are there with their medical health in my hands. Y'all with me? Again, I just think we don't think enough about it. So am I living in such a way that I'm building trust in my relationships, or am I not thinking about it and oftentimes then even building it down? What am I saying? Second question. What am I saying or not saying that's either building trust or tearing trust down? I'm going to give you a big illustration next week using the Brooklyn Bridge. Because I'm either building trust by how I talk with people, or I'm tearing that trust down. So there's a couple thoughts for you just to think about. Just say, Lord, show me. Show me how I'm doing on this. Because I want to be a person who's trustworthy. All of us want to be people who are trustworthy. I mean, you wouldn't be here if you didn't. Brenda, lead us in a song.